If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today is April the 1st, but ain't no fools around here. It is a Saturday evening. Sorry for the late start. We were having some trouble with the BeLive platform as we do try to provide video streaming along with our radio broadcasts. In some cases, was having some issues. I decided to shut it down and just use another piece of software so we could stream out our video live during this program, during this broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. During this broadcast, I want to focus on a couple of stories over the next hour. By the way, if you have any questions or comments that you would like to get in, by all means, you can give us a call at 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. Hit ** to unmute yourself. You might have to make a little noise as I may not be paying attention to the screen with the calls, but I will come to you as soon as I notice that you're there. Today, I have about four stories. It's really three stories, but two of the stories are so interconnected that I'm just going to call it three, you know, roll it up into one. Want to talk about Donald Trump, CEO of USA Inc.'s kill list. This is something that is not being talked about widely, and I think it should. I guess when President Obama started running his kill list, and I remember he did that little interview, and, you know, it was called Kill List Tuesdays, or I think it was Tuesdays when they meet to go over the list of who they're going to kill via a CIA drone strike. And so you got two journalists who are suing Donald Trump over this kill list that he inherited from Barack Obama. So that's a very important story that I think is not being paid attention to, that people should be paying attention to. You know, I see all these journalists making fun of Donald Trump and mocking him. Well, I hope y'all don't never leave outside the country because you just might end up on that kill list. And then, you know, we just hear about you was killed in an explosion. Unexplainable. A federal judge out of Kentucky has ruled, I believe, yeah, it's the federal judge in Kentucky. There was a federal lawsuit filed against Donald Trump, against him personally, because of his comments that he made at some of those rallies. Now, most people probably saw those Trump rallies because CNN especially was making a whole lot of money giving you 24/7 Donald Trump. And their CEO actually admitted to this, saying that, hey, he was good for ratings. Well, you know, according to who you read or what publications you read, you might find that there was some emails, I think it was in the Podesta emails, where they talked about getting their friends in the media to elevate people like Donald Trump. I think Ted Cruz's name was mentioned because those were seen as the two most far right or despicable candidates. And, oh, no way that they could beat Hillary Clinton. So, but it turns out that they were wrong in that, and he did get that 24/7 coverage, which aided him. I think there was a study done that showed how much free coverage he got and how many millions of dollars it was worth, as opposed to the other Republicans who were vying for the Republican nomination. So you should remember all of those rallies where you had protesters go in, maybe hold up a sign, maybe had a T-shirt on that said, you know, something that they didn't like. But this particular judge is talking about an instance where Donald Trump was telling those people who were there to see him to get him out of here. And you know, just kept repeating this. And a federal judge has determined that, yes, he was inciting these people to commit acts of violence. So that's a story that I want to take a look at. We'll share some of that with you today. Ron Paul. Do y'all remember Ron Paul? Ron Paul ran for president in 2008 and I believe again in 2012. They torpedoed his campaign with accusations of racism, even though this man was saying that the death penalty, he was used to be for it, but he was against it because of the disproportionate way that blacks are put to death as opposed to white people. He talked about the drug war was racist and how the DEA is a corrupt organization and it should be abolished, and that he would abolish it day one if he became president. He would totally abolish the DEA. And so, yeah, that Ron Paul. But it was discovered that some supporters of Ron Paul was running a newsletter that bared his name and a couple of articles that could be interpreted. I would interpret them as being codified racist language, you know, dog whistles and stuff. And although Ron Paul didn't write these himself, he said that the newsletter did bear his name and therefore he took responsibility for what over that newsletter, which used a bunch of different writers and what have you. But I do remember in my community, a lot of people say, oh, he's a racist and we can't vote for him. It doesn't matter that he wants to end the drug war. It doesn't matter he wants to eliminate the DEA. It doesn't matter that he isn't for all of these wars. And, oh, he had a racist newsletter in his a racist article in this newsletter that went out like 20 years ago or something. So they pretty much torpedoed his campaign with allegations of racism. Now, mind you, those same people that was talking all that crap about Ron Paul and what appeared in the newsletter over 20 years ago, these are the same people who didn't have a problem with Hillary Clinton, you know, calling young black and brown kids super predators in supporting her husband's crime bill and out there pushing for it to be passed, which led to what they call mass incarceration, but people, it's really a continuation of slavery via the 13th Amendment. She also was talking about the welfare queens, and she was saying there's a bunch of single mothers who are lazy and don't want to work, but oh, no, that was in the past. We're going to vote for Hillary Clinton this time around. You know, people going to do what they're going to do, but I'm like, at least be consistent. All right, how is it that you had a problem, despite this man's policy proposals, that would have a positive impact on the black community in terms of what they call mass incarceration? Again, it's a continuation of slavery. That's all it is. In terms of eliminating the DEA, do y'all know how many scandals the DEA has been involved in, including setting up deals with the Sinaloa drug cartel that allowed them to smuggle dope all the way up to Chicago, and then they distributed it to other urban centers from Chicago? This is in court records, people. I don't make up stuff. I don't come on. I don't push fake news or anything like this. This is documented stuff. And he wanted to get rid. Oh, I forgot. Oh, yeah, they were busted in Colombia. DEA agents attending a party, a sex party with prostitutes paid for by, guess what? The drug cartels. So this man was ready to get rid of that. But no, he, you know, there was a racist letter that appeared in his newsletter over 20 years ago. So, no, he's a racist. We can't vote for him. But, yeah, we certainly down with Hillary Clinton, though. Super predator, welfare queen comments and all. We down with her. Even though she ain't pushing nothing in terms of policy-wise that's going to positively impact the black community. No, no, no. You remember Bill? He played the saxophone, wore his shades, and she was doing the nay-nay and was up there in New York at that radio station playing dominoes with the boys or whatnot. But anyway, forgive my little rant there. But Ron Paul is quoted in an article from antiwar.blog. And he's calling for them not to increase. He's calling on the Trump administration not to increase the U.S. government's flow of military weapons to the police. This is something we had to fight Barack Obama on. This is something that activists had to keep pushing towards him to get him to do anything. And again, he said that he was one of those people that, oh, you have to make him do stuff. You have to push him to do stuff. He's not going to do it because it's the right thing to do or it would be justice and anti-racist. Oh, no, he's only going to do what he's pushed to do. And that's a direct quote from him. So don't get mad at Scotty if you're one of those Obama fans out there. Scotty didn't put the words in his mouth. Scotty just relaying those words to you in case you forgot. So the Obama administration did ramp down. This was a big thing after Ferguson, after we saw all of those military armored personnel vehicles. We saw snipers on top of some of these roofs and on top of these vehicles, military-grade weapons. It looked like an invasion of the military or something, and that became a really big issue. I don't know if y'all recall that coming out of Ferguson. And so activists started pushing the Obama administration to end that program of where they give military surplus, whether that be weapons, whether that be vehicles, and they give them to your local police departments. It was coming from the federal government. And most of your favorite congressmen and women for all these years, John Lewis, would sign these bills or vote for these bills that were transferring military-grade weapons to the police. Well, right now, there's a chance that that program is going to get ramped back up, re-implemented, because it never really totally stopped. But there are fears that Donald Trump is going to go over and beyond and really, you know, give these police the tools that they need to maintain 21st century slavery and human trafficking in this country. All right. The last two stories that I'm going to share with you and that we can go over is two of them are very similar, and it relates to global Afrophobia. Now, that's a term that came up in the past few years. I think somebody coined that term, Afrophobia. It just means a fear of Afro-descendant people, Africans, black people. And so this term Afrophobia was, you know, coined in order to explain the irrational fear that non-black people have towards black people. We're all over the planet. And the root cause of that is white supremacists propaganda going out over these white supremacist networks. And so you have African students being attacked in India. India has been in the news a lot because of rape and people just gang raping the females. And it's just crazy over there. I mean, it's like the rape country of the planet or something. And so they have a whole lot of issues with colorism and wanting to be white. That skin whitening cream is a big seller over there. The darker you are, the more melanated you are, the more you're going to be mistreated. And I think they still have an unofficial caste system over there. So, I mean, take a guess on who's going to be at the bottom. All right. It's going to be black people. So now you got African students who have went to India to study, to go to one of the universities, and they were attacked by mobs of these Indian men. It's quite disgusting. But also, you have a similar story coming out of China. Now, there weren't any physical assaults of black people in China, but there is an article coming from Quartz that talks about China having an irrational fear. And when they say China, they mean the Chinese, having an irrational fear of a black invasion bringing drugs, crime, and interracial marriage. Where'd you hear that before? That's that guy, James Harris Jackson, the terrorist, the white supremacist terrorist who traveled from Maryland all the way to New York to kill a black person because he mistakenly believed that interracial marriage was a big thing, a whole lot of people participating in it, producing all these interracial children and what have you. Well, it appears that some people in China have some of those same fears, and it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. So let's jump into the first story again. The telephone number, I'll be on air for about an hour today. Looks like we already got a call. Someone wants to chime in on what's been mentioned thus far. Area code 414. Thank you for chiming in on Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Man, Brother Scotty, this is Rob in Milwaukee.
Hey, what's going on, Rob? You sound pretty good, bro.
Man, listen. I was in greater confinement over the weekend.
Oh, really?
And the attempted survival unit that I have been in for the last 10 years is over. I have a temporary restraining order against me, and I take your ass around, man. Yeah.
Hey, Rob, you know we on air, bro.
I'm sorry about that.
So what's going on?
In Milwaukee. So temporary restraining order. I pulled up to the property to get my belongings. Her mom and her mom's boyfriend is staying there. Mom just got out of jail for bank robbery, lifelong cocaine addiction. And, you know, these are the people that surround my child right now. Now, even though I've been there and been supportive for the last 10 years. And, you know, man, I'm going through it right now. Man, you said I sound good. And that's because the people that I have been complaining about, my family, and them the people that actually got my back, and it feels good.
Okay.
I just wanted to just chime in and really share that, man. You know, I'm 36, Scotty, and I was in there, man, with some 19-year-old young black males, man, that really just revitalized, man, my life. Like, these young men, like, just so full of life, excited about life, whatever it might be. You know what I'm saying? I remember that. And being in this city, man, you know, it has knocked it out of me. You know, but not only that, she, in this quote-unquote restraining order, this is the last piece that I'll say. Okay, we have a white person as a landlord due to a decision that she made when I was not there. Now, he gets her to re-sign the lease months and months and months in advance, basically putting pressure on her so she won't move nowhere else. Okay, so the lease not up yet. But he putting the sign up, oh, it's for rent, and we're going to be bringing tenants through there and, you know, everything like this. Now, the whole household sleep, Brother Scotty. This white landlord bangs on the door, bring the tenant in, and then, man, in the room where my four-year-old daughter is asleep, man, this strange white landlord and this tenant is just looking in on my daughter in her room. So quite naturally, I had something to say about that. So now the white landlord, you know, said he failed. I threatened him and, you know, whatever the case might be, whatever, whatever, whatever. My issue is in the restraining order, the black female said that I threatened her landlord. And I'll mute my line with that. I'll chime back in a little later. But the network has been pivotal. And then even like, man, when I was just talking to you last time, like, man, this is what I want to do. Man, since that day, Scotty, my whole situation flipped.
That's good to hear, Rob.
Since that day I talked to you, I'm out of greater confinement. I am back at my auntie house, and they're embracing me, you know. So, you know, that's good. And in going back to this environment, man, it's toxic. I'm just going to keep it real, you know what I'm saying? And the environment I was in, I was able to focus and counter more. In this situation, it's going to be much more of a battle. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, I just wanted to, you know, upgrade that. And if the listeners don't know, I got to just put it out there. Man, when I was at my lowest point, one of my lowest points, man, I called Brother Scotty Reed, man, and Brother Scotty Reed called me back and allowed me to vent, man, whether he agreed or disagreed with it or not, man, he let me get it out. And Brother Scotty, man, I love you for that, and thank you.
You're welcome, Rob. I'm glad that I could be that ear. Sometimes that's all we need is just for someone to listen to us without being judgmental and what have you. And, you know, try to be helpful with any kind of suggestions that they may come up with. So it's good to hear that your situation is changing. And, of course, we're going to keep you in our prayers, bro. Now, let's get into some of this news of the day. I want to know why it is not a big issue about Donald Trump inheriting this kill list from President Obama. Well, there seems to be two journalists who are very concerned about Trump now taking over this kill list from Obama. Now, if y'all don't know what the kill list is, that is a list of names that the CEO of USA Inc. puts together and says that these are dangerous people, they are terrorists, and we need to kill them. Don't worry about charging them with a crime. Don't worry about arresting them or any of that stuff. Just kill them. Extrajudicial killings, sort of like what we see every day on the streets of America, you know, where we have these officer-involved shootings where they are the judge, jury, and executioner. So that is what the CEO has been doing, of USA has been doing since the Bush administration. It was expanded during the Obama administration, and I think it was the Obama administration was the first one to actually put American citizens on this kill list. Let me repeat that again, because I know most Americans, most quote-unquote white people, don't care about, you know, non-white people being killed extrajudicially by the government. They don't. That's just a matter of fact. So let me just say Americans, all right? And so long as it's somebody that belongs to another country, oh, Americans don't care. But do y'all care about Americans being put on a kill list and murdered by your government? Because that's what's going on. And now you got a person who a lot of people say is very unstable in Donald Trump, who now has that very same power that was passed down to him from the previous administration. And Congress has done nothing to stop this because they are part of it. All right. They are part of it. I think they get a congressional closed door hearing after the CIA kills somebody. So anyway, you got these two journalists who believe they are on the kill list, individuals who are targeted by the United States for deadly drone strikes. And they are suing Donald Trump and other top administration officials. This article was published by Politico.com. Former Al Jazeera Islamabad bureau chief Ahmad Zaidan and freelance journalist Bilal Kareem filed a lawsuit this past Thursday in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., contending that they were erroneously placed on the kill list during the Obama administration, and that Trump has illegally maintained that designation. The suit also alleges that Trump has loosened some of the safeguards the previous administration placed on the program. Now, you know what? I don't really care about safeguards. To me, it is wrong. I mean, it's murder. This is wrong. This is in violation of international law for you to be killing people arbitrarily like that. For example, you had at least two people from North Carolina. They were Muslim. They were non-white. And soon as they flew out the country, they were killed by CIA drone strikes. Now, I'm like, if these people had committed crimes and not just ranting about the evils of the U.S. empire online, why you didn't charge them with a crime? Why didn't you charge them with a crime, arrest them, indict them, and then put them on trial? Why are you going to wait till they go outside the country and then you're going to kill them and murder them? Tell me how that's right in any world. It's not. All right? That is not justice. That is not what they call due process. That just totally obliterates due process. And again, several American citizens, at least four that I know of, were killed by the Obama administration, and one was killed by Trump in his, once he took over, his very first kill through that program was a U.S. citizen, an 8-year-old girl who was in that Yemen strike where a whole bunch of civilians got killed. All right. So these two guys right here, I don't like the way they're going about this. This kill list should not exist at all. But they're sitting up here talking about, oh, we were erroneously put on it. So take us off, Donald Trump. You're illegally maintaining that designation on us. Well, since when is that a legal designation? I just don't understand where people's minds are at these days. Says files leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden and published by The Intercept in 2015 indicate that U.S. officials claimed in a private presentation that Zaidan, a Pakistani and Syrian citizen who conducted a series of interviews with Osama bin Laden, was a member of Al-Qaeda and of the Muslim Brotherhood and appeared on a terror watch list. Kareem, a U.S. citizen. Oh, I didn't know he was a U.S. citizen reporting from Syria in recent years, claims in the suit that he has narrowly avoided being killed by five separate airstrikes over the past year. In the suit filed by human rights group Reprieve, that's a UK-based organization. I know because I get updates from them. I'm subscribed to their email list. Both men deny any association with Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. The men also allege that their targeting violates a long-standing presidential executive order against assassination and that they are not lawful targets under the authorization of use of military force passed by Congress after September 11, 2001, attacks. So I wonder if they're talking about the executive order that President Ford signed that said that it's illegal to assassinate a head of state, because they are not heads of state. But again, they violate their own laws. They mean nothing to these people. They break the law anytime they get ready, because Hillary Clinton sure stood somewhere, I think, was she in Afghanistan or did she make an appearance in Tripoli in Libya for a brief time where she stood? I think she was standing on a platform or a podium or something. And she was talking about, we can't wait till y'all catch and kill Muammar Gaddafi. a prime minister of a head of state, which actually had a, what they call it, an alliance with the United States government, had a treaty with the United States government since 2005 to be an ally in Africa in the war on terror. But here you got Hillary Clinton working at the State Department, calling for the murder of a sitting head of state. That's against the law. Did they charge her with that? Of course not. So again, this is why I don't care to hear people who talk about this is a nation of law and order. That's bull. That's a bunch of bull crap. Don't believe that. Pay more attention to their actions than to their words. All right. So I didn't know this guy was a U.S. citizen. And so they are suing Donald Trump, I guess, to get removed from the list. Let me see. There are some differences which I think will be. Let me back up. A lawyer for Zidane and Kareem by the name of Jeffrey Robinson told Politico that he's optimistic that the new suit will get more traction in the courts. There are some differences which I think will be legally significant, Robinson said. At its heart, the Al-Awlaki litigation sought to directly challenge the use of drones and targeted strikes as a tool in fighting Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. This suit doesn't really seek to challenge that policy or seek to say that tool isn't the right one to use. Instead, the attorney said, the new suit contends that Zidane and Kareem must have a mechanism to challenge their inclusion on the kill list. This is a very deliberate process that needs to give some access to people who deny they should be included, Robinson said. So this ain't as simple as you finding out you share the same name as somebody and therefore you are on a no-fly list and you can't get on a board a plane here in the United States, and then you try to get your name removed. I've read stories about that where it took months, if not years sometimes, for people to get removed from those lists that should have never been put on them in the first place. But now we're talking about a kill list. Both of these men are journalists. Both of these men work in a war zone that the United States is currently engaged in. So they can be killed at any time. And like this man who's the American citizen said, they almost got me five times. So again, tell me again about how great the United States is and how it's a beacon of justice throughout the world when you have Americans, not that I want to limit it just to Americans, but where you have a person like a Donald Trump can just arbitrarily throw somebody on a kill list and that be the end of it. Next thing you know, they're dead. How is that justice? That is not justice. That's a violation of the so-called core principles found in their most sacred document that they call the Constitution of the United States. So again, miss me with all of that. The court said, the jury has spoken, we're a nation of law and order. I ain't trying to hear that because I'm not paying attention to your words. I'm paying attention to your actions. So that's a crazy story that I think more people need to be talking about. Where is the outrage? Where is the outrage that American citizens are being murdered by their own government? Where is the outrage? There is none. I don't hear Alex Jones, the so-called American patriot, who's really a disgusting piece of white supremacist trash, if you ask me. But yeah, I don't hear that American, a patriot, jumping up and down and hollering and going on these broadcasts, blasting Donald Trump for maintaining this kill list. I didn't really hear him make any noise about it when Obama was killing American citizens and maintaining this kill list. So again, this is one of those articles that I call a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call that you don't really live in the country that they say you live in, and saying that this is the best country on earth. Nobody's more free. Nobody has more liberty. We're a nation of laws. We're a shiny city on the hill. That's all a bunch of propaganda. Just pay attention to what these people actually do. All right. So now Donald Trump has that power. If I was Chuck Todd, I would not be mocking Donald Trump too much, unless you plan to stay in the country. That seems to be the only way they won't kill you by drone, but I'm sure they can find other ways. Next story. This goes back to, let me go ahead and take a station identification break because I'm actually overdue for one. But when we come back on the other side, we'll talk about this judge ruling that Donald Trump did incite violence against protesters at a Kentucky rally. As we saw during the campaign season last year, Donald Trump stand up on that podium and basically sick his dogs on the people who were there. Some of them wasn't even protesters that got thrown out. So, let's go ahead and take a station identification break. Do want to remind you, we do have these Black Radio Station Matters tees that you can get in exchange for a donation, a tax-deductible donation to the Black Talk Media Project. You can find us online at blacktalkmediaproject.org. So stay tuned. I'll be right back on the other side.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, the telephone number to dial if you have a question or comment is 866-510-9025. Sorry, we cannot take questions from Facebook or BeLive. The BeLive platform isn't working, which allows us to better see those comments and what have you. Apologies again for the late start. Now, I want to jump into this story about Donald Trump being found by this judge as, well, he's allowing the lawsuit to go forward and saying that there is enough evidence to show that Donald Trump incited violence against people who attended some of his rallies. So let me play this report from WLKY. Yeah, WLKY, where it was reporting on the time about this video that went viral of Trump supporters beating down a woman. You know, they're a bunch of woman beaters. So let's give a look.
This is the newest video. It shows a perspective of the 21-year-old University of Louisville student as she's being pushed out of the venue by a 75-year-old Korean War veteran.
Chop your head. The heads. Take it.
And anybody
get
else.
Out of here.
And we're worried about waterboarding. We are absolutely, we are going down.
This 21-year-old University of Louisville student says she was called every name in the book, including racial slurs, as she was shoved out of Donald Trump's rally Tuesday.
Get out.
The woman is pushed by several people. The man you see here is a 75-year-old Korean War veteran from Cincinnati. He tells me he was pushed first. He says he's not racist, and he says the entire Trump event got out of hand.
What's not difficult to tell is that she's being assaulted, and the assaults appear to have been incited by Mr. Trump in the first place.
Louisville attorney Daniel Cannon doesn't know what led up to what you see unfold on camera, but he says nothing in the Constitution protects assault.
What you have on the video is not people acting in self-defense. It's people that are essentially as a white mob shoving a black woman out and assaulting her, basically.
Many protesters were forced to leave the rally. In many cases, it was after Trump called them out.
Don't hurt him. See, if I say, go get him, I get in trouble with the press, the most dishonest human beings in the world. The worst.
Okay, we are going to leave it there. That's like a 4 or 5 minute video. Don't need to play all of that audio. But Trump's lawyers have been arguing in this case that his words are protected speech under the First Amendment. The court disagreed. It is plausible that Trump's direction to get him out of here advocated the use of force, Judge Hale wrote. It was an order, an instruction, a command. Trump's statement at least implicitly encouraged the use of violence or lawless action. The judge did not agree, however, that Trump should be held vicariously liable for his supporters' physical assault. Hale noted that the men who attacked the protesters were not employed by the Trump campaign and were not under his direct control during the rally. Now, here is some things about this lawsuit. It has more than just those charges. All right. They are suing Trump. It's three different protesters who are suing Donald Trump for incitement, vicarious liability, which the judge said he didn't agree with. That just simply means like a parent lives vicariously through their student athlete child or what have you, reliving their glory days on the football field. So that's what that means. But also with negligence, gross negligence, and recklessness. So the opinion from U.S. District Judge David J. Hale of the Western District of Kentucky denied most of Trump's motion to dismiss the charges, saying that his angry demand for the removal of the protesters was particularly reckless. So the only thing he didn't agree with, the judge, that is, was the vicarious liability charge, but the incitement, the negligence, gross negligence, and recklessness, the judge did agree with, and they are allowing the lawsuit to move forward. Again, this was a hearing where Donald Trump lawyers tried to get the lawsuit dismissed. So I imagine that you will see more such lawsuits, people who were attacked at these rallies, as word gets out that this judge allowed this lawsuit to go forward. But yeah, I would hold him responsible. He knew exactly what he was doing. He's not an idiot, as many people like to say he is. He may say some dumb, idiotic things, but that man he's not an invalid. He's not a retard. And he knows exactly what he's doing. And so that is what he's doing. That's what he did, was incite violence against protesters who weren't doing anything to disrupt the event. They may have had a sign. They may have had an anti-Trump T-shirt. But, you know, what about their First Amendment speech rights? So, it just shows the hypocrisy that, oh, he wants to now claim that him calling for them to be thrown out was his First Amendment speech rights, which I've had debates with people over the years about, you know, what is First Amendment speech? What is protected speech? Because I've had people who say, well, you can go up to black people and call them the N-word or any kind of derogatory name, cuss them out, get all in their face, but as long as you don't touch them, then you're good to go. Well, that's not true. That's not true. I researched the issue. It's a case that went to the Supreme Court, and it's known as the fighting words doctrine, that you just can't go up to people and verbally assault them and not expect a response. It's called fighting words. And so a lot of people, though, seems to think that you could just say whatever the hell you want to say to people and it's okay. No, you can't. All right. The next story I want to jump to concerns Ron Paul. Let me check the board. We don't have anybody that wants to comment on that story. All right. The next story, Ron Paul. As I stated, I don't support politicians. I support policies. I support platforms. I'm looking for relief for black people by any means necessary. And if that means getting this, that, or the other done through a president, then, hey, by any means necessary means by any means necessary. So I voted, well, I didn't vote for Ron Paul in 2008, although I did like his platform, the things he was saying that he would do. I ended up voting for Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente in 2008. Yeah, I believe that was the year. 2012, I voted for Ron Paul. Again, as I stated at the beginning of the program, Ron Paul wanted to eliminate the federal death penalty, because he said it was racist and towards black people. He said he wanted to get rid of the DEA and stop the funding the drug war. Who gets locked up for nonviolent drug offenses more than black people in this country? Okay, who targets non-white people globally more than the DEA? DEA actually has at least one office in Africa. They're operating in Africa. I told you about the sex party that the drug cartels in Colombia paid for some DEA agents. Okay, and they got in trouble for that. I don't think they lost their jobs. I also told you about the deal the DEA cut with the Sinaloa drug cartel that allowed them to smuggle dope as long as they gave the DEA information on their rival cartels. Yeah, if you can get some information on your rival drug cartel shipments and get that to us so we can go bust them and take pictures like we really doing something, you can smuggle all the dope you want to, okay? That's an actual deal that the DEA had with these people. But you don't hear about it on mainstream media, do you? You don't hear your politicians talking about it. They know it's occurring, but it's part of the program, all right? It's part of the program. So Ron Paul came up with some concrete proposals to address those ills. I did not care if a newsletter appeared or article appeared in his newsletter 20 years ago when this man was talking about ending the drug war and abolishing the DEA, okay? I didn't care. Who cares, man? Who cares? I don't. All right? But then the same people who were saying, oh, we can't support him, he racist, he had this newsletter come out 20 years, those the same people that was running up behind Hillary Clinton and pushing her. They ain't have a problem again with her calling us super predators. They ain't have a problem with her calling single mothers welfare queens, lazy welfare queens. Oh, all of a sudden, that didn't matter. That happened so long ago. And what matters is what she stands for now. You know, I'm telling you, I hope Hillary Clinton never runs for president or any office again. I wish she had gotten lost in them woods, man, and never to be seen from again. Because she's already out there playing people, playing women, playing black people, trying to get us riled up over Donald Trump. Go sit down somewhere, woman. You gave us Donald Trump. All right, so anyway, Ron Paul is concerned about Donald Trump increasing the U.S. government's flow of military weapons to police. Adam Dick, that's his real name, Adam Dick, published an article in antiwar.blog. Well, you can find him at antiwar.com. This is what the article said. Interview Wednesday at Fox Business by host Kennedy, libertarian communicator and three-time presidential candidate Ron Paul praised former President Barack Obama for placing some restraints on the United States government transferring military weapons to local police and criticized the potential action by President Donald Trump to resume the full flow of military weapons. Ron Paul said, this combination of the federal government and the military providing the weapons for local police, that's a long way from what the founders intended or the Constitution says. They're not supposed to be involved in this. So I'm going to go ahead, if there is no comments on the board, I'm going to go ahead and run that full interview again. This really came to the forefront, although this program has been going on for decades. It really, the people really didn't know about it until Ferguson. when those military assault vehicles, snipers on top of the vehicles, snipers on the roofs, and all the police dressed up like they were in a combat zone in Iraq somewhere. People weren't really paying attention to this program. But that brought it out, and there was a push to eliminate it. Well, now it can all come right back with the stroke of a pen by Donald Trump. And don't look for Congress to stop them. Not with a Republican-controlled Congress. And Democrats have voted to arm these police for decades. They supported this program. So let's go ahead and give a listen to this interview Ron Paul did on Do the Police Need More Firepower? Go ahead and cue that up.
Welcome back. Does your local police force really need grenade launchers? According to the Wall Street Journal, police unions expect the Trump administration to cancel President Obama's executive order that banned police departments from buying things like grenade launchers, armored vehicles, and other surplus military equipment from the federal government. The militarization of police has been a very hot topic lately, with opponents claiming the heavy-duty equipment is unnecessary and can be used to silence free speech and protests. But supporters say cops need the firepower to combat violent gangs. So which side is correct? Joining me, it's Dr. Ron Paul, host of the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Welcome back, Dr. Paul.
Thank you, Kennedy. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much. Is the only way to show your support of police in this country to give them grenade launchers?
Hardly. I don't think they would have to have these. And besides, this combination of the federal government and the military providing the weapons for local police, that's a long way from what the founders intended or what the Constitution said. They're not supposed to be involved in this, but it is the militarization of the police, and they're generally out of control. It's related to the drug war, which is out of control. And it just happens that this new administration, you know, they don't want anybody to even touch a marijuana cigarette, and they're going to train them to be better, I guess, with threats of grenade launchers. So, no, I think it's completely wrong. It's a strange thing that libertarians or conservatives can sort of be on the side of Obama, not allowing that to happen. But quite frankly, I think he was correct in not transferring those types of weapons to the local police force.
Yeah, a broken clock is right twice a day. And I agree with you. I think President Obama did have good intentions. Now, when I have this conversation, especially with cops across the country, and I've talked to many police officers about that, and we get into pretty heated discussions as libertarians, because it's not that we don't support police departments. It's not that we don't see that there is a need for some form of law and order. I understand that, but I also think that the military should look different from the police department.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a big difference. It's not a military force. It's not an army. And sometimes I think that they're moving in that direction because the greatest threat, according to the administration, is the global war on terrorism, and that is domestic as well as foreign. But, you know, if you put that in a proper perspective, most of those crimes are related to local crimes. I think in 1 year period, there were 9 people killed that might be related to the global, you know, to terrorism, where there were 12,000 murders, you know, in the inner cities, probably related to drugs.
Yeah.
So this whole idea that you use the global war on terrorism, that we better be prepared, you know, for, you know, mass conflict with these gangs, but and it is serious, it is, but I think local control, I think symbolically one of the worst things I ever saw on television was when the Davidian compound was burned down by the feds coming in because they had to, you know, have local police power in order to enforce law, and I don't think it was ever intended that way. The police were supposed to be local, and it shouldn't be with the military, and right now we certainly have moved in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and good police departments know that that community involvement and localizing police interaction as much as possible is what leads to success and trust in police officers in general. And I think when you have, you know, just as you pointed out, the visual of what appears to be a paramilitary organization patrolling the streets of your city, it creates a divide. And we have enough divisions as it is, whether they are political or racial or socioeconomic, that the last thing you need is another layer between the police and the communities that they keep safe.
And this is amplified because just like in every organization, you don't have perfection. So we are far from having perfect policemen. And sometimes all this weaponry and encourages the police to overreact. And we do see the scenes that almost everybody would say, hey, you shouldn't have done this. And you see people getting shot and they shouldn't have been. So the atmosphere is such. And we do know that all policemen aren't that way. But that's part of this whole military and war on drugs and perfection and the federal government coming in with tanks and all, because sometimes they feel like they have to use them. What do we have them for? We better be prepared. And they go out and they have all these uniforms on and helmets and tanks, and all of a sudden sometimes they make mistakes, you know. The SWAT teams have been known to go in and bust in. It's no knock, just go in. Oh yeah, sorry about this. They tear up places, and that has to do with with ease that they get these search warrants, that they go in and they do make a bunch of mistakes.
Yeah, toss up a flashbang flashbang device in a crib and burn a toddler. Well, Dr. Paul, thank you very much for your...
All right, so that was Dr. Paul, Ron Paul, former congressman, former candidate for president, long-time proponent to end the drug war, going all the way back to the 1970s. And so that was his commentary on the government of these military weapons going to these police departments. And y'all know how I feel about police. Are all police out there doing wrong? Are some of them actually trying to be a help to the community? Of course they are. But it's far too many of them who are not engaged in anything but brutality. The power that is invested into them goes to their heads. A lot of these people may be bullies or were bullied in high school, so they're going to take it out on everybody else now that they become cops. But again, the number one driver of these interactions between citizens and police is the drug war. Okay, it's the drug war. That's why the United States has more people in prison than any other country on the planet. And several countries combined do not have the total prison population that the United States has. So, you know, but a lot of these cops, man, what do you need these weapons for if you don't plan on using them? So that's what I'm concerned about. All right, so that's that story. I'm going to take a station identification break, and then I'm going to share with you the last two stories, which concern global Afrophobia. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting live every Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. But you can catch some of my video interviews and podcasts all throughout the week by subscribing either to our Facebook Black Talk Radio page, our YouTube channel Black Talk Radio, or by subscribing to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, the platform. We will be right back on the other side. Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. All right, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. We got a report coming to you from DW.com. This first story we're going to look at, India. India just really had a spate of mob attacks on African, Afro-descendant people, whether they were from the continent of Africa. I mean, how would they know, you know? But anyway, you've had a lot of mob attacks going on over there against Africans. Let me share some of this with you. Again, this is published on DW.com. Attacks on Africans expose India's racist inclinations. Like I try to tell people, Gandhi was a racist, man. Gandhi was in South Africa, part of the military occupying force, because Indians have always been proxies of the British Empire. And so, you know, Gandhi said some very racist things about Africans while he was part of that occupying proxy racist force in South Africa. Everybody likes to talk about he was this nonviolent, and you can't take away from what he did for his fellow countrymen. But at the same time, you're not going to get me not to talk about his racism, okay? So that's the country we're talking about. There is a video that I'm going to try to get to play for you on this string of attacks. It's not just one, not just two, but it's been a string of attacks on Africans in India.
Let's bring in now Fisode Okuni, who is a Nigerian software engineer and student at Stratford University in New Delhi. He is a member of the Association of African Students, which released that video. Thank you very much for joining us this evening to discuss this. How did you feel when you saw this video?
Well, I was really terrified. I felt terribly bad. I mean, just couldn't imagine the excruciating pains those boys were going through at that moment. I couldn't. I had to turn my phone because it was a deplorable sight. I couldn't watch the video.
Do you think that this is a new phenomenon, or has there always been this kind of racism in India?
Well, it's not a new phenomenon because the Indian society has a caste system. I mean, the racial attack or discrimination going on in India is actually deeply entrenched in the caste system, you know, which has even a sub-caste, and then they have a preconceived notion of somebody already, you know, without even, you know, knowing who that person truly is. So these are some of the issues that actually attributed to most of these spate of attack against African students in India.
So you think it's a pretty deeply ingrained bias there. Does that also carry over to the police and the politicians? What do you make of their reaction? Are they doing enough?
Well, they are not doing enough because this spate of attacks has been going on for the past years. I mean, it's just been going on every day. It's been happening. And they haven't been doing something very seriously. They haven't been taking it very, very seriously. It's been an issue that is always swept under the carpet because they feel it's not really something of very importance, so they don't really take it seriously. The police authority, I mean, they've not been very genuine. They've not been very honest about finding a solution to this this state of attack.
And your association.
That's the reason why it's been going on.
Oh, I'm so sorry for interrupting you there. I just wanted to tell everyone that your association, you're campaigning for the cases to be made public. You really want to bring awareness to what is going on there. We'd like to give you the platform now to share with us what your aims are. What do you want?
Yeah, what we want basically is for the Indian government to stand up to the occasion and you know, do what is right, do the needful. They should, I mean, the Indian government has a very huge interest in Africa. They have huge business in Africa. They have over $30 to $35 billion worth of investment in Africa. I mean, they pay very, they're putting in so much in Africa, but they're not ready to you know, take care of the welfare of African students who are studying in India. And this is what we don't want. I mean, this is hypocritical. If you have so much interest in Africa, and then you're paying lip services to the safety of African students studying in your own country, then it means then you do not really have Africa at heart. So what we want, if the Indian government does not really take drastic measures, you know, putting measures in place to really checkmate these things, you know, to really avert this spate of attacks from happening, we will be pushed to call upon the African Union to call up bilateral, you know, relationship with India.
Right.
All right, I'm going to leave it there. That's what I wanted to hear, because that's what I was thinking too. Now, they got all of this financial interest in Africa, then that's on Africans. Don't sit around waiting on these racist politicians and police to do what they're supposed to do, and that's practice justice. What does justice look like? Well, justice looks like if a mob attacks somebody, that they should be charged with criminal charges, whether that be assault, whether that be mob violence, whatever charges y'all have on the books to charge these people. I would not be begging these people. I would be getting on the phone to my ambassador. I would go to whatever the country I belong to contact the consulate there, and I would be putting pressure on these people. These governments in Africa that have these business deals with these people here in India, with India. Well, you know what? Exactly what that young man said. Talk to the African Union and tell them, guess what? We're cutting off our relations to you if African people are not safe in your country. You can't come to our country, pack your bags, all your businessmen, all your workers you brought here, and get y'all ass up out of here. That's what I would be doing, okay? So, you know, I don't expect racism. And then this story also, well, both of these stories, because I'm going to talk about what's going on in China here in just a bit. But I was talking to Melissa. Melissa is a volunteer of Black Talk Media Project. She helps put together the stat reports that we send out to our donors and our hosts on the network and podcasters to see, you know, how much we're doing in terms of traffic and distribution of podcasts and live stream. And we were talking about this today, and I asked her, I was like, I'm a little bit confused because people say that you have to be white to practice racism. Now, the definition of racism just simply means that I believe my race is superior to another race. It doesn't say you have to be a particular color or whatnot. Okay, I understand everybody doesn't feel that way, and I'm cool with that. They're entitled to their opinions or whatnot. But it confused me because I'm like, when I saw that Asian man and woman attacking the black woman in Charlotte, and I was hearing people saying, oh, they racist. I was like, wait a minute. I thought only white people could be racist now. I thought you had to have power to be a racist, right? That you had to be in control of the government. You had to be in control of the financial sector. You know, you in control of all major people activity areas in the country. That's what you had to be in charge in order to practice racism. So we know white people is in charge here in the United States. So that's where that logic comes from, is that, hey, you had to be white. Black people can't be racist. But then when I heard black people calling these Asians racist, I was like, wait a minute. Do Asians run USA Inc.? Are Asians in control of anything here in this country? I don't think they are. So this is kind of confusing to me, is if you have to be white to practice racism, then how you going to call non-white people racist then? Because that's a total contradiction to what you're telling me. All right. I say it is racism. Melissa said that it is proxy racism. And I can agree with that because I know where she's coming from on that. Where are these Indians? Where are these Chinese? Where are any of these non-white, non-black, non-Afro descendant people getting their information from about black people? They get it from white people. Again, six corporations, six media corporations control, I think the figure is 80% or 90%. I put the statistical data on our crowdfunding black media page. You can find that on blacktalkmediaproject.org or blacktalkradionetwork.com. It has the graphs and everything that show six corporations, media corporations, control about 90%, maybe 95% of all media on the planet. So if you got white supremacists, anti-black undertones, propaganda, in all of this media where it's being spread all over the world. So these people watching Fox News, these people watching anti-black movies where black people are portrayed as criminals, and they believe it. They believe this stuff. Let me tell you something. Now, I was going to do a video about this, but I forgot to do it. And I still may do it, but I was going to do a video where I was taking comments from the comments section of a YouTube video I did about the Philippines, Mad Dog Duarte over there killing people suspected of using drugs or selling drugs, just murdering them in the street. No trial, no jury, no nothing. Similar to the U.S. drone, CIA drone program. They ain't got to prove that you did anything. I say you was selling drugs. I say you was using drugs. We killing drug addicts and drug dealers in this country. And I was like, this is crazy, man. They're slaughtering people in the streets and they're doing it with U.S. taxpayer dollars. Okay. And I was raising a stink about it, raising awareness about it, because I bet you a dime to a dollar who's being targeted the most in the Philippines. Highly melanated Filipinos. Don't think that you don't got no Afro-Filipinos over there. Because the Philippines, one of their number one commodities is, and it's sad, I'm not saying this that this is a good thing, but their number one commodity or industry over there just might be the sex trade industry. Lots of soldiers I've heard, I've never been to the Philippines myself, but I've been in the military and I've talked to people who've been in the been to the Philippines, and they talk about how easy it is to buy some, you know what, over there. And some of these girls be looking young, man, that I see pictures of and whatnot. So don't think that what I'm trying to say is that possibly black soldiers left some seed behind, which is sad because I just can't think of leaving my seed, abandoning my seed anywhere. But I'm willing to bet you they're targeting the darkest Filipinos first. Because they seem to have that white identified complex going on, just like in India. And so these Filipinos, here I am saying, hey, it's wrong to murder people because they use drugs or sell drugs when you are not providing them with a guaranteed income or a job. They're just out here trying to survive the best they can. And for this Mad Dog Duarte, man, you should see some of the comments I was getting from Filipinos calling me the N-word, saying that black people were monkeys and we're a bunch of violent criminals and I should worry about all the crime in my community. These people not even knowing where I live or anything like that. So I'm saying that this is global. Our Afrophobia is real. And our Afrophobia, I don't know if that's a good word to use, because that means that you're afraid. They ain't afraid of us. They are not afraid of us. That's just an excuse they use. All right, these people are not in fear of us. So let's say anti-blackness. That's global, man. That's global. And we're seeing it play out in India right now. In the African Union, I have not heard not one politician or representative in the African Union or any Nigerian or anybody. And I do subscribe to all the African YouTube channels and a couple of African news media websites, and I'm not hearing anything about any stern warnings, any rebukes of India for allowing Africans to just be mobbed violence like that. I know I just made up a term, but yeah, that's crazy coming out of India. If I was a student, I'd be on the first plane out of that joint. Don't they got colleges in Africa? Yes, they do. All right. Go to college in Africa. Get away from these racist, sick people who want to be white. That's why skin lightening cream is one of the number one products in India. They want to lighten their skin. All right, so that's that story coming out of India. Now, we got a similar story, which is coming out of China. Now, they are not assaulting anyone, But they are talking about we got to do something about all these African immigrants. They're going to bring crime and they're going to be having sex with our women and you know, fear of a black planet, you know, because they know that African gene is dominant and it annihilates everything that it touches. All right. So, yeah, let me read this article. It comes to you from Quartz Media. This was, it doesn't say when it was posted. Let me see, or who it was posted by, written by, let me see, Joanna Wee, I think that's how you pronounce her name. So anyway, she writes, earlier this month in Beijing, amid the pomp of China's annual rubber stamp parliament meetings, a politician proudly shared with reporters his proposal on how to solve the problem of the black population in Guangdong. The latter province is widely known in China to have many African migrants. Africans bring many security risks, Peng Qingling told the local media. As a member of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, the nation's top political advisory body, he urged the government to strictly control the African people living in Guangdong and other places. Pan, who lives in Taijian near Beijing and nowhere near Guangdong, held his proposal aloft for reporters to see it. It reads in part, black brothers often travel in droves. They are out at night, out on the street, nightclubs and remote areas. They engage in drug trafficking, harassment of women, and fighting, which seriously disturbs law and order in Guangzhou. Africans have a high rate of AIDS and the Ebola virus that can be transmitted via body fluids. If their population keeps growing, China will change from a nation state to an immigration country, from a yellow country to a black and yellow country. On social media, the Chinese response has been overwhelmingly supportive, with many commentators echoing Pan's fears. Now, if you want to read the rest of this article, it is linked up for you in the program description on blacktalkradionetwork.com for tonight's broadcast. Again, fear of the black planet, man. You know, if I could pay for royalties on copyrighted music, I'll be playing Public Enemy's Fear of a Black Planet right now. All right, so this is just sick, man. This is just sad that we face these sort of problems all over the planet, even among other victims of white supremacy, because white supremacy is global. It is a global system. But why, you know, if these people have never really been around black people before, or Africans, never traveled to Africa, then where are they getting their perceptions about black people? They're getting it from the Western media. That's where they're getting it from. They're getting it from the white supremacist embedded messages in the media programming that Western countries put out to the world. That's where it has to be coming from, okay? I'm not saying it's impossible for other non-white people to have racist feelings towards other non-white people without seeing any of the propaganda or whatnot, but I'm willing to bet you, just based on an educated guess, that they're getting most of their information about Africans and black people in general from white propaganda, racist media. All right. So if you are Afro-descended person in any country around this world, especially if it's a non-black country, just know you on the battlefield. Just know you behind enemy lines, okay? And you might have to be prepared to defend yourself, even if that means taking another person's life. I was looking at some of the videos. Please go check out those videos again. I linked up to the articles, but I was looking at the videos, especially the one in India. It looked like they were beating somebody with a trash can. It was like the video angle was like from way above, like it might have been in a mall or something, and the camera was attached to the roof of the mall. But I see all these mobs of people just beating on and throwing stuff and beating a person with a trash can. Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody would have got shot. They might have killed me, but I'd have took a couple of them with me. It is no game out there, people. Anti-blackness is strong. Anti-blackness is real. And the system supports and promotes that anti-blackness. I'm reminded of stories like my some of my relatives who had been in the military older than me would tell me, like Japan. Like, no, this was one of my cousins. So he's actually close to my age. He got stationed in Japan one time. And he said, them white soldiers be telling them Japanese women that black soldiers grow tails after midnight. It might have been in Korea where they were saying that. But this is the type of stuff we have to deal with. It isn't imaginary. We're not making this stuff up. These are real news reports that I'm showing you. So if you're like me and you live in an area where you're in the minority, you better stay strapped at all times. All right. I don't know what the gun laws are like in India, but I would not care. I would buy me a gun off the street, what they call a throwaway, because I will not allow myself to be victimized by no mob, because who's to say you're going to survive it? All right. Perhaps they will disperse when you bust a couple of caps off in some of them. In self-defense, of course, in self-defense. All right. So I'm going to get ready to bring the program to a close. Since we don't have anybody with any comments that they would like to share, let me see. I will personally be back on air Wednesday night with an episode of New Abolitionist Radio. Join me, Max Parthas, and Johanna Elia as we focus on that weekly program on 21st century slavery and human trafficking via the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution. In closing, I would like to remind you that on August the 19th of this year in Washington, D.C., there is going to be a Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. They'll be meeting up on the mall, the Washington Mall, I think that's what it's called. It will last from 12, that will be noon, up till 5 o'clock p.m. So please, if you're able to come out, please come out. I know everybody ain't into marching. I'm not really into marching either, but it ain't just about marching. It's also about networking and organizing and raising awareness about the fact that the United States never stopped practicing slavery. And it's right there in their most sacred document, the U.S. Constitution, in the 13th Amendment. And while they've been lying to Americans and the rest of the world that they abolished slavery after the Civil War, nothing could be further from the truth. And again, that is why the United States has the world's largest prison population, primarily filled with non-white people. All right, so make sure y'all mark that on your calendar. Google Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. That'll take you to the I Am We page where you can, if you can't make it out, maybe you can contribute some funds, some equipment, whatever they may need. Crystal Roundtree is the main organizer for the upcoming march, and we want to support her in every way we can to make sure that it is successful. So please check out that online and donate and come out if you can. All right. Recognize the fact that you live behind the enemy lines and you may not even be in the United States of America Incorporated. You may be in India. You may be in China. But we're living behind enemy lines, and anti-blackness, Afrophobia is a very real thing. And so you need to move about in such a way to minimize the chances that you become a victim of one of these mobs or one of these white supremacist terrorists like we saw travel to New York. If you're around people, pay attention. Always pay attention to everybody around you. All right, stay safe. Don't become a victim. And peace and blessings to all. I'm out.